Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard. The Inside Analog Photo radio program is all about the traditional photographic process. We talk about all aspects of analog photography, including the hybrid workflow. You can find out more information over at www.insideanalogphoto.com. And of course, Inside Analog Photo is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. These guys have the coolest instant photography materials known to mankind. They have, of course, the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4x5, color and black and white. They have the Instax systems in the wide format, the Instax 210 camera and film, and of course the Instax Mini in the Instax Mini 7 and the Instax Mini 25, both in color film. Beautiful stuff. There's nothing cooler than instant photography. You get a print, because if you don't have a print, you don't have a real photograph. This is great fun stuff. This is great for art. This is great for business. This is cool stuff. You definitely want to check them out over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends over at Photo Publicist, providing worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development for the photographer, turning photographers into celebrities. You can find out more information over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the highest quality work known to mankind anywhere on this planet. Unbelievable developing, scanning, and of course, output on high quality Fuji Crystal Archive. Unbelievable cool stuff these guys are up to. And remember, you don't have a photograph unless you have a print in your hand, and you need to print your pictures. This is important. You need to supply proofs to your customers and even print your own work, because it's not about looking at it on a monitor. It's about holding a print in your hand. Definitely check these guys out at Richard Photo Lab, of course, at richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5. DR5 Chrome Black and White Developing, that turns your black and white neg into, that's right, black and white chrome. Unbelievable stuff. www.dr5.com. Our friends over at Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com for the camera strap that will not slip off your shoulder, guaranteed bar none, the coolest strap around. Our friends at Iger Studios for the finest quality drum scans known to mankind, igerstudios.com. Our official media partner, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, for all things traditional photographic process on the web, www.apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.eastmanhouse.org. Today on Inside Analog Photo, we're going to be here with John Reuter. John is the CEO, the president of 20 by 24 Studio in New York City. This is the last great analog photographic process. They've achieved their goal of making brand new reagent for the photographic stock left that they had acquired from the Polaroid Corporation. They have made the P3 reagent, and now they've mastered the P7. They're in control of their own destiny. This is a studio camera that you can still shoot. You can rent the studio. You can do photographic processes. And this is the last great large format traditional analog photographic process left to man. This is it. It's real and it's working, and you can do this in New York City. And John's going to join us today talking about what he's been up to, and of course, this reagent project and everything going on with the 20 by 24 studio. John, how you doing today?
Good, Scott. I'm very well. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us on Inside Analog Photo. Great to have you back on the program to get a very cool update of what's happening with the 20 by 24 studio and all the cool stuff you guys are up to.
Yeah, I guess I haven't been here to update you since last August, and that's almost several light years worth of activity. At that point in time, we had just taken possession of the materials from Polaroid almost a year late because of the delays that ended up being caused by the Petter situation. So there was a lot of difficult complications going on there. So last August, I had just gotten the film. I had it in a warehouse, and we were just finding spaces for the machines. So what we did over the end of the summer and early fall is I contracted out to an existing chemical company called Webco Chemical in Dudley, Massachusetts. And we put the chemical reactor there, which is like a big mixer, essentially, but a very sophisticated mixer that mixes under high temperatures, a vacuum, nitrogen introduction. And so it needs to be tied into all these lines. And of course, it's pretty complicated to dispose of the washout and all that with it. So to be able to contract with an existing space saved me all kinds of EPA requirements and things like that, and probably saved me quite a bit of money as well. So we've been working with that, and then simultaneously we set up a second production facility in a beautiful old building in Putnam, Connecticut, called the Belding Mill. It's a former thread factory right on the river. So we have a first floor space there that we brought in the very large pod machine, which weighed about 2 tons, and also the film spooler, which was an old printing press that Polaroid had altered to be able to electrically spool the film down from the very large rolls. Most of these large rolls of both positive and negative probably have 200 meters on them, and then we end up sub-rolling them down. The positive is only 50 feet, and the negative is about 150 feet or so. So that's all in place. We actually had the darkroom and the spooling thing done and the pod machine done quite some time ago. What we've really had to catch up on is building our reagents from scratch. When we received everything from the warehouse, there were barrels and boxes and buckets and all kinds of things of about 35 different chemical compounds and some listings, and this would comprise our ability to make all three reagents. We still have three films that we offer. One we call P3, which is the historic 669 film, the one that does transfers and lifts. Then we have another color film called P7, which is sort of Polaroid's attempt to do the brighter Fuji color. And then we still have our black and white PP400. So all three chemicals are mixed in between there. So we had to sort all this out. One of the things we quickly discovered is that there should have been a huge skid worth of documentation and recipes and measuring equipment and things that was set aside for 20 by 24. And apparently, we believe it got shipped by accident over to Inchcape because half the warehouse went to Impossible Project for the 8 by 10 line and half we took possession of. So we didn't understand this right away, and I was busy installing and all that kind of stuff. But as time went on, we realized that we didn't have these things. And all the consultants I brought in kept saying, well, hey, where's the lanyard, they call it, or something like that. And we couldn't find it. I asked Laurie, and he tried to find it, and they couldn't find it either. So we had to move ahead. I mean, we couldn't just stop on that point. So we sort of had to piece together these recipes from various computer files and everything. Keep in mind that I was delayed a full year, and the original intent of our deal was that Polaroid would still be around when I took possession of everything. It was supposed to happen in April of 2008, and it didn't happen until June of 2009. So by then, virtually everyone was gone from the company. They were shutting down operations, so we didn't have the help that we were supposed to get and that was intended to be there all along. So it's been a bit of a struggle to put this together, and I'm happy to say that we're finally pulling it off. We successfully made P3 quite some time ago. That was the easier of the film to do, and we had a struggle with the P7, the brighter film. We just this week, literally, got a good reagent batch, and last night I made the pods and brought some home in my car. We're taking it down to New York on Tuesday, and it's going to be put to use immediately. So the gods of fortune are finally smiling on us after being indifferent for so long, if you can look at it that way.
How hard has it, John, been to finish up this formulation of the P7 reagent since you guys didn't really have anything?
I mean, we had some spreadsheets, and some people, when they left Polaroid, they had their laptops, and not all the files were purged, not the top secret stuff. It's just that it just didn't get to me. So we had a couple things, and we tried them, but what turned out was the way we were weighing out the chemicals. Because we had all the right chemicals in there, but if you don't have the ratios and the weights and the amounts correct, and the real performance driver of instant photography is a compound called potassium hydroxide, which is a very alkaline solution. It's a base of 14, so it's quite active, and it will burn your skin badly in its raw form. That's why also Polaroid goo, if you get it on there, will certainly irritate your skin, and if you leave a glob on there, it might actually burn off a layer of skin. So it's very active. So if its ratios aren't correct, the film will not work at all. We went through this in two full runs, so it was getting a little frustrating, getting a little expensive, but finally we got it, and the film just looks gorgeous. I mean, we had kind of forgotten how good the fresh stuff could look because our other film was somewhat past its expiration date. When that's all you have, you just sort of live with it and still look good, but this new stuff looks phenomenal. It's like stepping back in time a little bit to 3 or 4 years ago. So it's really exciting. Our last one up is black and white. I'm actually going to be bringing in two of the key people who used to do black and white for Polaroid, Paul and Bob Nangeroni. These guys go all the way back to Edwin Land. They used to work in the early black and white labs in the 60s. So I just figure we're not messing around anymore. We don't want to waste any more time or any more chemicals. And I'm bringing in the real guys, and we're going to move forward.
With bringing in these older engineers that actually developed the stuff at Polaroid, do you find that even with their knowledge base, it still puts you at a position to where you don't have any kind of equipment, or is there anything really special that you have to do, or now that you have this brain trust that you can just move forward and make all this stuff no big deal?
Yeah, we don't really need any more special equipment. I mean, I've been buying some lab things. We bought a different scale and things to measure alkalinity, that sort of thing. So we weren't missing $100,000 items or anything like that. I mean, the key thing for us was the reactor that mixes the stuff. With black and white, it's also going to be a machine called a homogenizer, which is like a dairy homogenizer. It forces the reagent through a very small aperture in the end, like an eighth of an inch, at tremendous pressure, like 3,000 PSI, and it removes any latent oxygen that might still be in the mix, and it really makes the stuff consistent and pure and also last a lot longer. We haven't been running homogenization on the other two films because we really didn't need to, but we will have to do it with black and white. For me, being able to tap that brain trust is just amazing. I mean, I worked with a lot of these guys in the final 6 months of Polaroid. We were trying to make some corrections to 20 by 24 film. So I just go in there and sitting around with 9 or 10 of these guys. That's just extraordinary what they know and what they can do. And you just get to a point where none of them really should have lost their jobs. There could have been some kind of Polaroid moving forward. You see all the revisiting now. If you measure what Impossible's doing and what the new Polaroid, the Hilco Gordon Brothers group, trying to revive all this stuff that didn't need to be revived if someone hadn't made that decision way back when. They could have kept a small pilot factory running probably and kept these key guys on board. Sadly, it didn't happen. And it's sort of ironic that now people are scrambling to get back to it. And then one of the biggest problems is that Polaroid or Petters scrapped all this equipment, that they junked this stuff that was worth millions and millions of dollars. And now everyone's trying to reconstitute it. And it sort of never had to happen. So that's sad to me. We can't do anything about that. We have to move ahead. So you can lament all you want.
Yeah, what are you going to do? It's like, how much more can you drag Petters through the tar and feathers?
Exactly, yeah.
Didn't they already lock him up now forever?
I don't think he's gone to jail yet, but I thought it was 50 years. Did I hear 50 years?
Oh, too bad.
Well, for all the lives he ruined, let me tell you, I have no sympathy for him. None at all.
No. I think interesting, too, the new Polaroid company and their association with Fujifilm Japan and how they're doing some private label branding of their instant photography, I think is great for all instant photography. Especially your gig that's bringing this attention out and all this hoopla that's going on. And let's sort of chat about what you guys have been up to lately.
I met some of the new players in the new Polaroid, I think last November. Giovanni Tomaselli is the main person I interface with, and he's based in Hong Kong, but he comes to the U.S. quite a bit. And he has extensive experience in digital cameras and the Asian market and all of that, so obviously the Fuji connection is kind of a natural for him. But yeah, they've rebranded the Instax, the small one, as the Polaroid 300. It's interesting to follow the press accounts of it. Old school Polaroid people kind of poo-poo and say, all you're doing is rebranding. But people don't realize how much rebranding has gone on through the years anyway. And the fact that Polaroid actually did put out Fujifilm themselves under their name in many formats. I mean, the 300 used to be the Mio a few years ago. And there were other films. There was ColorPak film for the pro market. Pro Vivid was a Fuji product. And then also Transparency film. It's 100D, but it was in a Polaroid packet, and it was a 100 ISO 4x5 transparency, and that was a Fuji product, too. So there's been a lot of that going on, and people would be surprised if they knew throughout the photographic industry, not only in film, but in cameras and lenses and things. There's a lot of people making stuff for people, and it's just harder in today's economy, with the global economy, to not do that, because there are certain companies that have expertise. Polaroid no longer has machines, so they have to do that. And there's a lot of interesting things. I think Polaroid's going to get a little bit more active in customizing things that they want. I can't talk about it completely because I'm under somewhat of an NDA with Polaroid, but there's going to be some exciting products coming out. And so in a couple of years, I think you'll see some of the old school materials back, and you'll also see them pushing ahead on a digital level as well. Got kind of a tough thing to pull off here. They inherited a company that everyone wants what it used to be, and sadly that cannot be. And again, they just can't throw up their hands and walk away. They're trying to make the best of what they've got, and I think they're very serious about it. So I think it's a good thing. And that coupled with Impossible Project, which has sort of taken the mantle of like old school Polaroid, you've kind of got the best of both worlds. And the consumer has the ability to choose. When you think about like the Lady Gaga connection and that kind of marketing juggernaut and everything, it's really not to appeal to the old school Polaroid audience. It's to appeal to younger people and 15-year-olds who might buy a 300 camera and Target and that sort of thing. And there can be a lot of serious money made there.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently, I guess the sales are doing very well with this 300 camera, and more so than what Fuji was able to sell under their own name. Fuji, as well as you well know, because you've been working with them, has been trying to market it in the U.S., but I don't know if they just don't have the resources or the interest. They just haven't done as well, and it comes down to that whole issue of the brand. People sort of laugh at it, but that Polaroid brand is incredibly powerful.
Oh, definitely.
People who go into a store, they either don't know or they don't care that it's Fuji. It's instant, Polaroid, doesn't matter to them. And that's what I think they're going to tap with this, is a younger generation to get them excited about instant and stuff. I don't know why you'd want to criticize that. It's fine. I mean, as you said before, the more instant is out there in the world, the more people think about it, and maybe the more people will pick up a camera and want to try it. I can only see it as being good.
I think, like we've chatted about before, is you have this new generation of photographers that have never shot any analog product, and
yeah,
they see this instant film, and it doesn't matter. There's a very large market for industrial commercial applications for the Instax, insurance, police. I mean, there's a lot of things that we don't think about as doing art. They're worried about selling container loads of this stuff to other industries. Mm-hmm. And with Polaroid coming in, it's keeping, A, the numbers up with Fuji, so Fuji won't want to discontinue making instant film.
Yeah.
And I think it even keeps the door open for you guys. At some point, you're going to have more big sheets of film somewhere.
Yeah.
So I think just keeping the whole industry alive and showing this new blood that, hey, look how cool it is to have an instant photograph and something that you have in your hand that's tactile.
Exactly. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I mean, we still have our work cut out to sell what we've got. I've got about at least a 3-year supply of 20 by 24 right now, so I got to focus on that first. But certainly we'll keep our eye looking down the road to using either a Fuji product or maybe even Impossible. We'll come up with a way to make a peel apart product at some point. I mean, they have their hands full with the integral that they're working on now, but it's actually easier to make a peel apart product than it is an integral product, because you peel it away and you stop the process. I mean, that gives you a huge advantage over integral, which you somehow have to stop inside that packet. So it's a lot more complex to pull off. So if they can, and they are pulling this off, I think down the road they'll be able to do that. They did get the 8x10 line, so it's conceivable they'll be doing an 8x10 peel-apart product at some point in time. People are impatient and everything, and it's very hard to explain to people like why this stuff takes so long, but when you're doing it, you totally understand. It's just not easy, and it's not all science either. There is a huge artistic component to doing this stuff. It's like cooking, in a way. Mixing up reagents or doing these things, you have McDonald's cooks, and then you have 4-star restaurant cooks. And we all need 4-star restaurant cooks to pull off what we're trying to do here.
Well, I mean, as people know, you get a recipe for something, and you try to make it, and it's not what it seems to be. It's like, well, I had the right ingredients, but it doesn't work. It tastes like garbage. Well, it's applicable to reagent and film chemistry as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's way more complex than I had ever imagined. Every time I see some of the older Polaroid people, I thank them again for all they did for me all those years, because I was spoiled, actually. I mean, I had such a great infrastructure that was servicing 20 by 24 and all these different people. Yeah, they had responsibilities for other films, but once I lost all that, I really realized just how special that was. But I'm lucky. I still have access to the guys that used to do it, and it's taken a little longer than I had hoped, but we're getting there. Nothing was more exciting than peeling that P7 test and seeing perfect color and good D-max and good D-min and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's stuff you just took for granted, and when you do have a struggle, you do realize how special these materials are. 50 years after the fact, or even longer, it's an amazing process to pull off an instant picture via analog materials.
It is. So tell me about sitting in Edward Land's chair.
Yeah, I posted that on my Facebook page. I didn't dare put it on the 20 by 24 one, too, so as not to incur the wrath of old schoolers. The new Polaroid has donated part of their archive to the MIT Museum. So it's a lot of old cameras. I mean, I saw early sunglasses and documentation and letters. And one of the things they had was one of his desk chair, which was this great old big leather thing. The seat was all cracked on it. So I didn't even think that we'd be allowed to sit in it. They just rolled it in, and of course we all started sitting in it. Like, who wouldn't? So I was trying to strike a Land-esque pose or a Landian pose. It felt good, though. I don't think I got any smarter. I joked on my Facebook page that I felt smarter already, but I don't think I actually am.
But it's very cool, nevertheless.
Yeah, and of course, the shoot we were doing was on MIT property, which was literally 2 blocks from where Land's original office was. My first job at Polaroid was there, and then also my colleague who was with me worked for 40 years for Polaroid. So it was like going home in a way. So we actually had a blast. And the idea was for Lady Gaga to sit in the chair, which I noticed on some of the sites and everything people thought was sacrilege. But my colleague said that Land would have been delighted to have her sitting in his chair.
I bet so, yeah. So the whole thing with the 20 by 24 camera and the studio, you guys have actually ramped up and been getting a lot of work. You're actually really busy.
We have, yeah. I mean, a lot of my focus last summer and into the fall was certainly on getting production going. After the economic collapse in late 2008, business was very slow. It was hard for me to focus on trying to build it because I had to build all this other stuff. Jennifer, my studio manager and director of photography, was trying to focus on that. But what do you do when the phone doesn't ring for 3 months? I mean, it was some scary times there. Fortunately, we would get enough work to get by, and our investors stood by us and helped us out when things got a little slim. Then you try to build attention again, but once you're off the radar, people don't know, and we're not contractually allowed to use the Polaroid name, at least not at the moment. So when I did our website and stuff, it was just 20 by 24 studio and things. And like, if you would Google 20 by 24, you would get 20 by 24 inch frames, or it was really hard to get up there on the list with a new website. And I remember this years ago, even doing my own website, it took a long time for me to get ahead of the other John Reuters. I always had to fight Reuters news agency that always took it. And there's also a putter that was made in the 1960s by a guy named John Reuter, who still beats me in most Google searches, sorry to say. But anyway, it's tough to get that notice out there. And so it was a slow build, but just on our own inertia, the beginning of the second quarter or the end of the first quarter this year, things started to really pick up. We picked up some really great projects. We're doing a nice advertising gig with AOL and Chuck Close, which is steady going on. And those things kind of feed each other too. Once one agency person talks about it and their whole world is word of mouth, you don't get to these people by your website or by advertising or anything. They either want to do it or not. And the portraiture that we started focusing on last year is paying off. We have a steady business in that. We've actually signed a contract to do a huge project with a hip-hop book this summer. They're booking 5 weeks of the studio, which is like unprecedented for a summer. we're getting as much activity as we can handle. And we're certainly getting a lot of attention thanks to some of our association with Polaroid. This Lady Gaga shoot we did, my web traffic on the 20 by 24 site went up 1,500% in one day just by virtue of the fact that our name, 20 by 24 camera or studio, was mentioned two lines away from Lady Gaga. So I'll take it. I mean, it's great. I mean, I actually was quite impressed with her. I thought she was very professional, very smart. She immediately went over to Jennifer and asked to see how the camera worked. She went under the dark cloth with her, and Jen was showing her how she looks through the ground glass and what I can see, what I can't see. And so she got it. She understood that the camera is cumbersome, clunky, and takes a little bit of time. And she was very patient with it. She knew what to wait for and all of that. And of course, she knows how to be photographed. There's certainly no doubt about that. So, but she knew what she wanted. We're trying to rush the shoot because she didn't have a lot of time. And so we were doing two shots in a row, which sounds silly to anybody else who shoots any other format. But doing two large Polaroids in a row takes quite a bit of expertise and coordination of everybody. And Jennifer just rocked the camera. We did like 21, 22 shots, and they all were perfect. So it couldn't have gone better. She loved it, and hopefully she'll work with us again. It's interesting. She's such a firebrand that people either love her or hate her. I know Polaroid's taken a lot of flack for the association with her and also the title of creative director and things like that. But it's not creative director for the whole company. It's creative director for a certain line of products and things like that. And obviously she doesn't come into the office every day. I just think it was a smart move in my mind. It obviously got them tons of attention. Just the little rub off we got can show you the power of that. So I was pleased with it, and I'm looking forward to working with her again.
No, I think it's great, and it just brings more exposure to instant photography of the studio. I really think that the rebranding of the Instax Mini is going to help a lot of people in different areas. It's cool to bring this awareness out to newer photographers and younger people and anybody that wants to just have fun somewhere and make prints. The whole instant thing is really cool right now. John, let's chat about some of these other longer customers that you've had have sort of picked back up. You just did a gig with Mary Ellen Mark, but then I want to touch base too on the Sotheby's auction and how some of the 20 by 24 prints, even William and Chuck, went for a huge amount of money.
Yeah, Chuck, as I mentioned before, we have the big AOL project, and he also personally is doing a lot of work. I don't know if people know this, but all of his large-scale paintings are based on 20 by 24 and have been since the 70s. So it's great to have him. Mary Ellen has been a very dedicated customer as well. She shoots on a lot of film sets. A lot of people don't know this, but in my mind, she's one of the best behind-the-scenes film set shooters there ever was. And we were lucky to, for the Tim Burton's Alice film, I guess that was almost 2 years ago, when they were shooting, did some portraits of the cast and everything. We were out recently in Austin, Texas, at a soundstage for the remaking of True Grit with the Coen brothers, of all directors. And Jeff Bridges is a starring role, and Matt Damon, I think he's in the Glenn Campbell role. So it was just great. Marilyn is also shooting film, a lot of 2¼ that they're going to piece together a poster from. Everyone's just stopped in your tracks when you see this. Jeff loved it. He just was all over the camera, and his daughter happened to be around, so we did a shot of the two of them, and he's going to treasure that forever. Even though it was an alternating shoot, the fact that you slow down and you do the Polaroids in a more measured way and you look at them, it's just a way different rhythm and pattern than shooting even 2¼, where you're doing roll after roll after roll. And there's no feedback outside of the first few instant pictures that she was taking. I guess she doesn't use Polaroid film anymore. You have to use Fuji. If you're doing proofing on a pro photo set, you have to have a good film with a good contrast and everything. So she's using the Fuji black and white for that. Like the art directors from Paramount were just blown away by the camera. So it's funny how being inside for 30 plus years and everything, you think, well, God, by now everybody has had to have heard of 20 by 24. And it's not true at all. And of course, with all the press out there of Polaroid going away, they're kind of surprised that, well, how did you survive? It takes too long to do the whole story because the story is so complex. And I mean, the main factor was that I was part of Polaroid for 30 years. And it was a very purposeful decision to try to save this. And fortunately, we had a couple of years to plan for it and everything. And it was well planned for, but nobody ever planned for Petters being a crook. That kind of threw a little bit of a wrench into our timing. But it's good. We're really excited to continue with our older customers and getting newer ones. Jennifer has been focusing on a very low-level artist support program where we reach out to what she's identifying as some younger artists who could take advantage of the system. We're not able to offer a lot. You know, we certainly don't have the budget that Polaroid used to have. But our goal is to get these younger artists going with it, and if they have a good gallery, all of a sudden maybe we'll build a new Chuck Close or a new Wegman and everything. So you got to keep feeding it. For us, it's still a fine balance. We had a tremendous financial investment to get to where we are. So I'm just kind of hoping that maybe the affiliations that we might have with Polaroid and other companies will help us to reach out to people who can't quite afford the retail of it and everything. Historically, since I've always been part of Polaroid, I certainly am keen on supporting younger artists and giving people access to it. But I also, on the other hand, have a business to run. I have an investor to answer to, and we have to just be careful financially about how we approach these things. But the spirit's certainly there, and the better we do, the more I'm able to care that kind of stuff.
So if somebody wants to pitch a project to you, I guess they would just send an email off to yourself or Jennifer or somewhere to the studio.
Yeah, we prefer the info at 20by24studio.com as a start, and then it's on our website, www.20by24studio.com. It's a blog site now, not a static site anymore. In fact, I use the blogging software you recommended, which is the ProPhoto.
Yeah, the ProPhoto blog theme is excellent.
Yeah, it's excellent. Highly recommend that to photographers out there if you're looking for a great way to present your work. Works within WordPress and all of that, but it's really configured to make imagery look really good. So I've been thrilled with it, and I heard about it first on your show.
Yeah, the new version 3 is cool, and the built-in galleries now, and you can have side widgets, and it's really great for whatever it is, $175.
Yeah, it's a great piece. I mean, because I couldn't imagine building that from scratch in WordPress myself. I don't think I would have the patience to do it. And it's so customizable that you can make it look very personal, even though it's a template. The best thing for me is being able to update it so quickly, because I've done sites for years and years, my own, and also the studio site. And when you have static pages, you got to redo it, and you got to redo all the links, and it just gets to be a nightmare. And after a while, you don't even want to update it because it's just so hard. So a blog format is just great. So people should check that out with our site. We try to keep it up to date once a week or so.
It is. It's looking good. And of course, they can follow you on Facebook.
We've got quite a following on Facebook. I think we're up to like 1,350 followers right now. That's kind of a fun thing. I actually have it linked to the blog now. It's a little more personal on the Facebook one. I sort of take it even more informal than the blog site. We'll try for lighter things and things that are maybe tangential to our business, but are people who are interested in Polaroid. If you look all over Facebook, there is a ton of interest in Polaroid instant things. Jack Perno, a photographer out of Chicago, put together a fan page called Impossible Photographers, and it's all Polaroid photographers who are still keeping it going. There are just tons of offshoot stuff. It'd be interesting to add up the aggregate of all the people who are fanning those kind of pages. It's a substantial amount of people, I would imagine.
There's quite an interest in it still, and I think that people still need to understand that they can actually do some work with the 20 by 24. You don't have to refinance your house to do it.
Maybe your car, but not your house.
But really, for what you get, I mean, look at what just sold at the Sotheby's auction for some of these 20 by 24s.
That was an eye-opener to me. I mean, I've been sort of resisting the auction, and I certainly didn't sanction it. I don't approve of it. I never wanted that to happen, but it seemed there was a certain point where it was inevitable. So then, actually, in the end, it turned out to be kind of a positive because it showed the market responding to the value of these images that were taken with the camera. Some going back to almost 30 years. Had a Chuck Close 9-panel composite go for close to $300,000. You had a single Andy Warhol portrait, and granted, Warhol's passed away and all of that. Close-up of his face. I was actually at that shoot in 1980. $250,000 for one Polaroid photo. And then besides that, lower down in the market, you had David Leventhal with imagery from his Cowboy series to his Triple X and others going for $17,000, $19,000, $23,000 an image. I mean, he must have been thrilled.
Well, yeah, because anything he's got now, it's worth bank.
Absolutely, yeah. And Wegman was mixed. Sonny, I mean, I kind of felt bad for Bill because he had a lot of stuff in there. And it ranged from early Man Rays, which are his most coveted because that's the first dog and he's been gone quite a long time, to the Fays and everything, and then some of the younger dogs. And so I'm not quite sure what the logic was in people bidding up some really high and letting some go really low. So for Bill, it was actually maybe a disappointment because it was such a mixed market as far as his work was concerned. But other artists like Carrie Mae Weems and Robert Frank, and just some solid sales there. And of course, Ansel Adams, one of his murals went for $700,000-something. I think in the end, it just shows you that, hey, the work has to be good. And of course, these are like blue chip people and everything. But it was just nice to see the market respond that way. And again, it's attention on instant imagery. It's people thinking about it. And with all the films available now, maybe people will think about using them now. But they see, maybe they could be the next David Leventhal. It separates you from the pack. If you think about everyone working digitally and how you sort of make your output that makes you look special or something. Like you do something on canvas or you do it in caustic or whatever. But if everybody's got the same surefire technology, there is a tendency for the work to start to look all the same. So it's a lot harder for an artist, I think, to get a personal signature going with the technology that's available today, unless they really understand it deeply and know how to manipulate it in a certain way. If you just go by the default, photographers become interchangeable to me. And a lot of the ones that I think, even using digital, they're mimicking analog looks. They're going out of their way to work in Photoshop or Lightroom or use edges or whatever, and they're trying to make it look like analog again. So it's kind of ironic in some ways.
It is, but people can go to your place, rent some gear, and do some stuff.
We're very service-oriented. We treat it like it's a film shoot. We're a film crew. You're the director, and we are at your disposal. Between Jennifer and myself, we have over 40 years' experience in 20x24 instant photography. We've both been on tons of location shoots. Jen actually specializes in available light locations. So we have a lot of experience that comes with that. You don't just come in the door and we sit in the back and drink coffee and make phone calls while you try to sort it out. We're there with you every step of the way.
John, what do you guys look forward to moving forward in the future? You've got different reagents. You're happy now. The black and white stuff's starting to cook. What's the next thing for 2024?
Well, I think once we get to the plateau, we still have black and white to tackle. That's coming up actually next week. We're going to try to move very fast on that. And of course, I've been focusing on just getting this stuff done. So it's almost like I'm going to get to the mountaintop and suddenly I'm going to look around and say, okay, now what do we do? Obviously, we want to sell off a lot of it and get it out there into the world and get people thinking about it. What I'm trying to get going is more cameras around the world. I'm really trying to convince Polaroid to build one for themselves and use Tracy Storr in San Francisco, who built a camera last year. So if we can do that, obviously that's sort of a self-fulfilling kind of situation where the more good cameras you have out there, the better. Tracy made an excellent version of the camera. In my mind, as good as the originals that Polaroid made, which helps the process. As you know, a few years ago, we had another manufacturer, who I won't mention, who made, in my mind, pretty mediocre cameras. And it actually was kind of a negative on the medium because it was so difficult to work with it. People would get one and they would give up in frustration because it just didn't provide the experience that the Polaroid design ones did, and certainly Tracy's did. So if we can get more cameras out there, that'll be better. With the New York camera, we still are about 90% of the activity right now. We just can't be everywhere. Of course, the travel situation is a little complicated. When you take the camera out of New York, then you can't do New York shoot. So more cameras certainly would be helpful. And then I would say in perhaps a year's time, I'll probably focus on just this next year, trying to get our sales going and get everything out there and maybe get some camera contracts out. But then we're going to start to focus on probably some different replacement films eventually for the Polaroid film. Black and white is the least amount of film that I have, and so that'll be my first focus. And we'll see. I don't know what company would do it right now. Fuji obviously is still making a black and white feel apart, so that would be a logical choice. But I'm not sure where they are in terms of that product cycle, if they're discontinuing the one that I would want to use, which would be unfortunate. But I couldn't move this any faster than I have, and so we just have to work with where we are and all of that. But our goal, certainly, and I want everyone out there to know, is to not just run through this film and then hang it up, but to keep this going as long as possible and move into new generations of films that may be even better than what we've got now. Who knows?
Well, it's a unique process. Very, very unique. Do you have specifications for Polaroid back or film use? That if you had somebody that wanted to make their own back for a conventional camera or make their own, that there's a way that you have some kind of dimensions that people can use if they want to make any of this gear?
You mean like a processor?
Yeah, if they wanted to make a 20x24 processor or even a whole camera. I mean, the main thing is the back. The back is the biggest gig.
The cameras can vary. Obviously, the more robust the camera is, the better. I mean, a lot of people who try to adapt a conventional camera, which is primarily a field camera. There's two things about field cameras that make them somewhat problematic with Polaroid processes. One is their bellows are not made to extend the way a studio camera does, which is 60 inches is what our studio cameras do. And so you have a two-stage bellows to accomplish that. Most field cameras have a one-stage bellows, and you have a real problem with the bellows dropping over the length, even if it is long enough to go 60, of keeping that up and out of the way of the light path. That's one thing. And also, they tend to be lighter built, so they tend not to be able to hold some of the bigger lenses that we have. And also, just adapting them to a good support is problematic. So what we've come around kind of full circle to, after flirting with the idea of the lighter field cameras and the off-camera processor, is the original design, which was processor built onto the back of the camera. A sturdy sort of studio stand for, and a very robust bellows extension system. But we do get letters from people every now and then. I try to get them to Tracy, and it's not easy to build a processor. The rollers are the most expensive part. It can cost you, getting a single pair of rollers, $4,000 or $5,000 just for the stop, and then you have to have them ground to a precision. And then setting up a system that keeps them under the proper amount of spring pressure, because the chemical pod system, the way it works, is the reagent that we've been talking about, is injected into this pod, and it's like what you'd see in the small Polaroids, but it's 20 inches across. It has to be delivered to the rollers, so in an off-camera processor, you hand put it in there. It's a chain-driven system that throws them off and puts them in there. So there's a lot of complex mechanical stuff that goes on there, and Tracy went through a lot in rebuilding the one that he did, so it's not quite as easy. It's not a knockoff kind of thing, particularly if you want it to deliver the performance that the film needs. When you have a web of film this large, 20 inches wide, a lot of things have to go perfect across that whole web for the whole run of the film. And if there's any variation in that, you're going to see it physically in the film. So it's pretty complex. I mean, I recommend that they go to mammothcamera.com and have Tracy do it. He's very flexible. If you have an existing camera, he'd be happy to build a processor and cassette system for you. Cassette also is quite critical in being able to be light tight. Again, one of the complications of the off-camera or the portable systems is that you have to have a huge dark slide, which is just a physical problem. It's just such a big hunk of metal that comes out of there, and keeping it from falling out and sliding. I haven't seen any system that's really solved it yet. It's just such a big thing. And then also we have our negative, which is on a big roll, so you have to have a chamber that can hold that. So there's a lot of complexity of the portable systems that has made us go back and see that Polaroid definitely made the right choices in the way that they designed it in what we call an all-in-one system, where the negative, positive, and all of that is built into the frame, and it's permanently attached to the camera. It keeps your alignment good and all that. Every time you pull a cassette out, put it back in, alignment issues could come up. What we discovered in the foray that we had into that for a few years, and I still use one of those cameras. I have it in the Putnam lab for testing, which is fine for that. But as a production camera and to deliver the results that people expect, we found that the all-in-ones are really the way to go.
Very interesting. So, John, let's talk about the blog, the website. Where do they go to see what you guys are up to follow you, Facebook, all that kind of stuff?
The studio blog is www.20by24studio.com. On Facebook, it's just 20by24 Studio. I still make art on occasion when I'm not making pod, and I have a personal blog at www.johnruder.com/blog. And it has a bit of my history with 20x24 and some of the digital things that I do with Lens Baby and infrared and that sort of thing. I'm actually personally moving into trying to tackle video right now. I got that Canon 5D Mark II last year, and it's been just intriguing the hell out of me to try to get it going from a video point of view. And I've worked with Final Cut in the past and everything, but when CS5 came out, I actually went for the production suite. I'm trying to teach myself Premiere Pro, which is not so hard. It's very much like Final Cut, but the main one I'm trying to tackle is After Effects, which is a moving Photoshop, if you can imagine. I've always dreamed of being able to try to do sort of primarily abstract videos. So I'm not really looking to do narrative or anything, but to make the kind of work I used to do, but make it move and have some sort of sound thing to it. So that's what I'm personally trying to take on in the midst of all this. It's kind of a nice sort of vacation from it. It's so different from what I have to be involved with and everything. And it's just a lot of cool stuff. Ever since they did the firmware update where you have the right frame rates and all that with things, and just what is possible in After Effects is pretty amazing. So hopefully if I get one, it's good. It's going to be on the blog. So people can check it out. I might put up some small ones pretty soon. I'm getting there. But to do Photoshop and have it all move, it's kind of complex.
After Effects, you can jump in both feet forward and make a couple things pretty cool, but really to get underneath the hood, as you're starting to find out, like you said, it's Photoshop on steroids, but it does neat stuff.
It absolutely does, yeah. And it's just amazing. The camera delivers high-definition video, so if you do get something good, it's going to be big. You can watch it on your widescreen TV and all of that. So it's fun. I always try to keep myself amused. That's been the whole point of my personal work throughout the years, because I've had a business all these years, and obviously I worked for Polaroid for so many years, so it's kind of a nice thing. I don't need to make a living making videos, so I can have it be fun. And so that's what I'm looking to do, is something to keep me going.
There you go. John, I really appreciate you joining us today. Really cool to see what's going on with the studio and the continuance of how you're keeping this instant photography alive. It's really cool.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's a very exciting time for us, and we're looking forward to people getting in touch with us, maybe dropping by the studio sometime. So thank you for having me, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Well, there you go. John Ruder, 20x24 Studio, New York City, the last great analog photographic process. They've got new reagent. They got beautiful brand new film ready to go. You can shoot this camera and make unbelievable art. You need to check out their website over at www.20by24studio.com. You can find out everything that's going on, recent shoots, news, information about booking the studio, going on these shoots, doing this last great photographic analog process. This is the coolest stuff you're ever going to see. Definitely check them out. The Inside Analog Photo Radio Program has been brought to you by Fujifilm for their full line of instant cameras and film, and of course, fine quality Fuji Crystal Archive paper over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. Our friends at Photo Publicist, worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the finest quality lab in the country, richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5 for black and white chrome at DR5.com. Upstrap for the finest quality camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder at Upstrap-Pro.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios at IgerStudios.com. And of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group at APUG.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House, over at EastmanHouse.org. I've been your host, Scott Shippard, here on Inside Analog Photo. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.